It was always worse at night. The shadowy figure that followed me each waking hour, yet seemed just beyond my reach, just around the corner. That fleeting flash of movement out of the periphery of my vision became mortal at night. It slipped into my bed and rested its head on Kit's pillow, melded itself against my back under the counterpane, exhaled a breath against my cheek in the darkness. Sometimes, if I was in that half world between wakefulness and sleep, I'd imagine Kit had come back to me, that he slept in his spot on the bed, that even a year later I hadn't encroached upon. Other times, like tonight, it would only remind me that Kit was truly and completely gone, and the tight ball of grief that resided in my chest would unfurl its sharp talons, stealing all hope of sleep. With a sigh, I threw back the bedclothes and slid from the bed, shivering. I was always cold in the house, even more so now that it was almost unbearably empty. After sliding on my slippers and pulling on Kit's dressing gown that rested at the foot of the bed, I wandered aimlessly through the draughty cold hallways and rooms of Langford Hall, Kit's ancestral home. Although I'd been raised with three older brothers at the neighbouring estate, I'd always considered Langford Hall mine as much as Kit's, having spent as much time growing up there as in my own home. Since the time when I'd been a little girl, I'd adored the elegant rectangle of red-brown Georgian brick, the three stories tucked under a hipped, dormered roof, the sash windows, 12 panes each, evenly spaced on either side of the door. Or maybe I'd simply adored it because it was where Kit lived. I'd been in love with Kit since I was 4 years old, and he'd lifted me up onto the saddle in front of him when I'd announced that ponies were for babies. When I was 8, I'd told my eldest brother, Charles, that I would marry Kit one day, despite our 10-year difference in age. He'd laughed, but had promised to keep my secret. And he had, taking it with him when he'd been shot down over the channel during the war. Clutching Kit's robe tightly around me and trying my best not to personify a tragic heroine from one of my sister's novels, those gothic romances that she thought nobody knew she read, I walked slowly down the upstairs hallway and visited the three vacant bedrooms of our children, all but one away at school. Even the family dog, Walnut the Whippet, had abandoned me, allowing pity cuddles now and again, but vastly preferring the warm kitchen and the prickly housekeeper, Mrs. Finch. It made no sense that Walnut would choose to align himself with a woman who professed daily that she didn't like dogs. But I had long since given up trying to make sense of a world that refused to make itself logical. Moonlight through the tall windows guided me across the foyer to the closed door of Kit's study. I paused, my hand on the knob, still feeling as if I might be intruding. I was beyond exhausted of feeling that way, tired of pretending and acting as if everything were normal, that Kit had merely been away for a short trip and would be returning soon. But he wouldn't. I knew this, but I still found myself turning toward him in the evening to say something, or tiptoeing past his office so not to disturb him. It was all so foolish of me. Yet I couldn't seem to resurrect the sure-footed and unwavering young woman I'd been when I'd first married Kit, the same woman he might have even been a little in love with. Turning the handle, I pushed gently on the door and stood in the threshold for a long moment. The spicy scent of his pipe smoke wafted toward me, and I found myself peering inside the room expectantly, as if Kit might be sitting at his desk or in his favourite reading chair by the window. But the scent quickly evaporated, and I was left with the empty room again. With a resolute jut of my chin for encouragement, I walked forward, as memories, like water, threatened to drown me.